I'm Johan Bulk from the eMAC Disconnect Research Group at KU Leuven. And as you can see, this was joint work with the people from Technion, University of Michigan, and University of Adelaide. So I'm going to talk a bit about Foreshadow. You might have heard some headlines last Tuesday. You might have seen this logo popping up on a few websites because after over 7 months of responsible disclosure, we were super happy to come forward with our findings and share them with the public. So what's it all about? Well, this session is named the side channel attack session, and as you can see, the research area has been growing quite impressively, exponentially, over the past 20 to 30 years. In many ways, I think it's fair to say that the high-impact attacks of 2018, Spectre, Meltdown, Foreshadow, are a logical result of this long and fruitful line of work. On the other hand, I want to stress that this new breed of speculative execution attacks also implies a paradigm shift in the way we think about security. That is, for the previous decades, let's say in the pre-Meltdown world, we were very used to think of application security at the source code level. By having this classical attacker-defender patch release kind of thought, where attackers go and exploit source code level vulnerabilities before they are being fixed. And what essentially Meltdown brings in this perspective is a universal read primitive for free due to an implementation bug in the hardware. So we can even go and exploit perfectly secure applications, let's say formally verified source code, and still leak the secrets due to the underlying CPU. So Meltdown required us to change our perspective, to go one layer down in the system stack, and to patch at the operating system level. I think it's fair to say that Meltdown gave quite some people quite some headache, but there was also initially some good news. That is, Meltdown melted down everything except one fortress in the CPU, and we're talking here about the software guard extensions, SGX, included in modern Intel processors. And SGX provides these enclaves that remain protected and completely secure against Meltdown due to these nice abort page semantics. Well, you may have also seen these headlines last Tuesday that show that even Intel's most secure element got blown wide open by the Foreshadow attack. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. But first, I want to give you a bit more the big perspective, the big picture here. What is all this enclave execution like SGX? What is it all about? Well, the key idea is to get rid of untrustworthy abstraction levels. We want to get rid of all these millions of lines of trusted code in modern operating systems and hypervisors by building security primitives directly into the CPU. So we're talking here about isolation. Let's think of enclaves as sort of a vault of encrypted memory where the key is hard-coded in the CPU. So it's exclusively accessible to hardware, and outside software can never peek into the enclave. There is also a primitive for attestation, which basically boils down to the fact that, again, at the hardware level, there is a crypto scheme that allows to compute a proof that a certain enclave is running untempered on the system. So I think this picture looks great. There is one problem, though. We have this CPU in green. And that means that once there is a flaw in the CPU, a bug in the CPU, the whole thing can collapse. And that's exactly what we did with Foreshadow. We abused a subtle CPU bug to go and read memory from SGX enclaves. And we also show that this leads to a complete failure, a complete collapse of the system. So how does it work? Well, Foreshadow is a three-phase attack, where in the last phase we plug in unmodified Meltdown. We first identify these two additional phases that need to be resolved before applying Meltdown. And Intel refers to these as L1 terminal fault. It boils down to the observation that you need to bring data in the L1 cache, and then you need to do a trick with the page tables. So this is going to be the main focus of the presentation, but I first want to very briefly recap Meltdown. So Moritz before me did a great job, and I will keep it to the point. Meltdown is a quite elegant attack, in my opinion. It's only 3 lines of code. The first line dereferences a secret, an unauthorized access, and this will eventually lead to a page fault. Before that, however, the CPU has a bug where there is a race condition, and the transient out-of-order instructions ahead in the pipeline can still compute on the unauthorized data. So the two yellow lines here act as the sending end of a flush reload-based cover channel. Eventually, The architecture will raise an exception, and the architectural state will be rolled back. However, the micro-architectural state can remain persistent, and the attacker can set up the receiving end of a flush reload-based covert channel to recover the secret encoded in the micro-architecture. So nothing new so far. This is Meltdown. We have just seen it, and it works beautifully against kernel memory. Why then does it not work against SGX? Well, some people mentioned abort page semantics as a reason. And let's look at what this means. So try to think of SGX enclaves in the CPU as kind of a building covered with mirrors in an untrusted environment. The situation is such that when you try to peek into the building, you will bounce back on the mirror. You read -1 at the hardware level. However, when you're executing inside the enclave, you have a nice wide open view where you can see the entire address space, both the surrounding untrusted world and the inside protected world. And that's exactly the intuition why back in January, it was rather trivial to get Spectre working in an SGX setting, because the Spectre gadgets being exploited, they run inside the enclave protection domain and they can abuse the nice open view to transmit secrets from inside the enclave to outside. However, when people tried Meltdown, they quickly found that all of the code is executing outside of the enclave, bounces back on the mirror, reads -1, enclave secrets remain protected and completely secure. Well, let's look a bit, let's get rid of the analogy, zoom in a bit at the architectural level. It's important to realize that SGX was designed as a set of minimum processor extensions, and they kick in after the conventional address translation process. So try to think of SGX as a hardware-level check that either succeeds or fails. And when it fails, it will replace the value being read with -1, a dummy value, to protect the secrets. Crucial here is, in Intel's own words, that this behavior is unrelated to abort, exception type aborts, and we exactly need exceptions for Meltdown. Meltdown exploits the delayed exception handling in the CPU, whereas abort page semantics kick in on the fly before instruction retirement, even before the data reaches the out-of-order instructions. So that's what goes wrong. Let's zoom in one last time. This is a picture that I presented here last year at USENIX Security, and then we were looking into side channel analysis on this very first step, the page table walk, of the whole machinery that is activated upon every enclave access. As we'll see, this is quite crucial to understand the trick we use in Foreshadow, because what happens when you do a naively applying Meltdown against SGX enclave results in this micro-architectural path ending in a poor page semantics and the value being protected. What we need was a fault, right? So let's try to provoke one in the page table walk. How does this work? Well, it suffices to simply issue this unprivileged mprotect system call, which will clear the present bit in the page table, give you a page fault even before the SGX machinery is ever started. As a nice side effect here, I should stress that this system call is unprivileged, so even non-root adversaries without control over the operating system kernel can attack SGX enclaves with a basic foreshadow attack. A last requirement in our three-phase scheme was to make sure that secrets reside in the L1 cache. And as the previous talk also nicely said, that's not the case for Meltdown. So an important difference with foreshadow is that we consistently found that the attack only works when enclave data is already residing in the CPU L1 cache. We also experimentally verified that this is not the case for kernel data. So we can do a Meltdown type attack on kernel data that resides in DRAM, but once our enclave secrets reside in the L2 cache, the success rates sharply drop to zero. What's the reason behind this? Well, in a way, Meltdown and Foreshadow exploit different bits in the x86 page table. Meltdown showed how to read kernel memory from user space. This is the supervisor bit. What we show is how to read memory that has been architecturally unmapped using the present bit. So it's two different things. And Intel refers to this as an L1 terminal fault. And it only became clear to us last week what this means at the micro-architectural level. That is, intuitively, Intel processors, when they do a page table walk and they encounter an unmapped page, They will early out the page table translation process, the address translation process. At the same time, however, during the abort, in the same clock cycle, they will still send the physical frame number, the physical address, to the L1 cache, which will do a comparison and happily pass any data it has cached for that address onto the transient out-of-order instructions where we can do the unauthorized computations and recover the secret. So for now, the bottom line is that we need to have the secrets in the L1 data cache. In the paper, we contribute 3 novel ways of doing that in an SGX setting. The first one uses our own open source SGX step enclave execution control framework to go and execute the victim enclave one instruction at a time. And this allows us to completely recover all memory operands and CPU registers of the interrupted enclave. A second approach that we propose is a proof of concept that Foreshadow can also use concurrently, much like the TL bleed paper presented earlier, where we have a spy thread on one logical core and the victim enclave executing on the same core resident physical CPU that shares the L1 cache. And lastly, we came up with an innovative technique that abuses the interrupted operating system control over enclave memory pages. More specifically, we found that when unloading and directly swapping back in an encrypted enclave page, that this results in the CPU loading the plaintext enclave content into the L1 cache. So this is kind of a prefetch oracle that we can use to load arbitrary data into the L1 cache without even executing the victim enclave. And if we combine this with a single-stepping SGX step framework, then we can dump the entire enclave address space after each and every instruction. So that's a very strong result, I think. We have also in the paper additional micro-benchmarks and optimization techniques, so do check it out if you're interested. However, at this time, you should see this thing in action, and Ophir is going to give a demo.
Thank you. Let's switch. Hello, thank you, Yo. So now we're going to show a live demo on a real SGX machine, and I hope that the demo gods will be with me. So what we see here on the top is the first thing we do is that we load the enclave. We run the victim enclave. And with Foreshadow, we can actually dump the entire address space of the enclave. It can be gigabytes of memory, but for the interest of time, we now assume that we know the address of the secret, and we loaded on this specific enclave a very interesting blog post talking about security. But the first thing we're going to do is just try to naively access the memory to give you a sense of what are those abort page semantics that Yo was talking about. So now, what you see now is basically, it's not Foreshadow yet, it's just simply trying to access this memory, and there's no page fault, because basically it's a legal access if we're trying to access memory that belongs to the enclave, but nothing interesting comes out. We just read FFFs, and there's nothing interesting. And now we're gonna run Foreshadow, and again, the victim enclave doesn't need to run. So even if the victim enclave have all those fancy defenses against Spectre, IBPP or IBRS, L-fences, red poline, it doesn't matter because the victim actually doesn't run. So let's see what happens when we try to mount Foreshadow to extract the data. So you see the hex bytes being red, and on the right-hand side you see the ASCII values. And you can see it's quite a high success rate. And I know that when we worked on the paper, like the success rate was close to 100%. And I thought, like, I can't put this success rate in a paper. I mean, it's clearly a lie, right? I mean, so thank you. So we've seen that clearly we can breach confidentiality. And now Yo will discuss what are the precautions of breaching confidentiality, and we'll see it's actually when confidentiality goes out the door, there's some other security guarantees that goes out with it.
Okay, thank you, Ophir. So as we all know, we have now a full breach of confidentiality. But as we all know, confidentiality without integrity is rather worthless. So that's why SGX also provides strong primitives to remotely provision secrets to genuine enclaves, and also to store those secrets onto disk for later use. This all proceeds through a primitive known as remote attestation, which is quite an involved process, but if you bear with me for a while, it simply comes down to the fact that every Intel CPU is shipped with a unique CPU level key, which is only known to Intel and exclusively accessible to the hardware. So this basically implies that Intel is going to impose itself as a trusted third party, both locally by means of this architectural quoting enclave and remotely by means of this Intel AutoStation service. And a successful flow then starts from the software provider sending a nonce, let's say, to its enclave. The enclave forwards this to the quoting enclave, which, and I'm going to simplify a bit here again, derives an encryption key from this master-level CPU secret and uses it to sign the measurement of the application enclave and the challenge, which is forwarded the signature over the untrusted network. And since Intel has the corresponding public key, it can verify that this was indeed a genuine enclave on a genuine Intel CPU. What we show in the paper is that we can extract this long-term Intel private key from the quoting enclave, which allows us to completely bypass this association flow. So we can forge arbitrary Intel signatures and deploy malicious enclaves. What we also show is that this leads to sort of a domino effect where we can establish a man-in-the-middle position, an active man-in-the-middle position between the enclave and its remote provider and the enclave and disk. So we can read and modify all traffic, both locally and remotely, from an enclave. So in the USENIX paper, we have focused exclusively on dismantling Intel SGX using Foreshadow. But last week, we became aware, Intel notified us, that the implications of Foreshadow are more far-reaching than this. So basically, after we reported the basic Foreshadow attack in January, Intel engineers, after they established the microarchitectural conditions allowing for this attack, quickly found out that the same principles also apply to read operating system memory and even virtual machine monitoring hypervisor memory. So basically, we're still talking about the same three-phase attack, but now in the second phase, instead of unmapping enclave secrets, an untrusted process could wait for the operating system to unmap its own memory, or an untrusted virtual machine could set up a malicious guest page table mapping to access the hypervisor. So Intel consistently refers to this as L1 terminal fault attacks, whereas we wrote up a Foreshadow next generation technical report. Check it out on the website, where we described how this basically leads to reading arbitrary physical memory and completely breaches the virtual memory abstraction that we were so used to over the past decades. How does it work? Well, again, keep this in mind. I showed it earlier. An Intel CPU will, upon encountering an unmapped page during the address translation process, at the same time abandon early out the address translation and send the current physical address to the L1 data cache. Important to see here is that this happens in the case of enclave before the SGX machinery had a chance to sanitize the physical address. In the case of the hypervisor, it happens before the extended page table walk and the virtual machine monitor had a chance to sanitize the guest physical address into a proper host physical address. So the intuition here is that you can pass unauthorized, non-sanitized physical addresses to the L1 data cache, which will happily match whatever is present there and pass it on to the out-of-order execution. So it's clearly a devastating attack. What can we do about it? Well, we can again think in terms of three phases, and neutralizing any of these three phases suffices to completely block off the attack. So after the Meltdown fiasco, Intel, of course, promised that future CPUs will have silicon-based hardware-level changes against Meltdown. This will also protect against the Foreshadow variant. However, we need to do something for all those millions of devices out there today. And then we're going to have to focus on a combination of phase one and phase two mitigations. Mitigating phase two comes down to taking away the attacker's control over the physical page number in when unmapping a page. And this is exactly the kind of changes that Linux and other mainstream operating systems have been pushing through last Tuesday. However, remember that in SGX we're dealing with explicitly untrusted operating systems and we'll have to mitigate earlier on at the hardware level. So Intel came with a set of microcode patches that automatically flush the L1 data cache whenever exiting an enclave. And as a side note, you have to do something similar when exiting the virtual machine monitor, the hypervisor. One concern here is that Intel explicitly left the option to leave hyperthreading on or off, left this choice to the platform owner. And we want to very explicitly make the recommendation here that if you are using SGX, you should definitely turn off hyperthreading, or our hyperthreading-based foreshadow variant can still steal your secrets. So the takeaway message from this work should be clear. We presented foreshadow, which is essentially a primitive to read data, arbitrary data from the L1 data cache. And it leads to a complete collapse of all CPU protection models. We have focused in the paper on Intel SGX, but there are also very important real-world implications for operating systems and hypervisors. And the short-term message here is do patch your systems, and also do disable hyperthreading if you're using SGX, at least. I also want to conclude with two longer-term messages. One is investing in fundamental side-channel research does pay off. So we only found this attack because of a long line of work in page table-based attacks. And the other message is that we want to urge the research community to continue her investigation in alternative trusted execution environments that do not suffer from such domino effects, where taking away one building block confidentiality leads to an entire collapse of the ecosystem. So I'll happily take questions.
Just there's an update. Our tweetbot that can sign genuine attestation quotes is back up. So if anyone wants a genuine attestation, feel free to tweet at Foreshadow Attestation as a Service or us. And now we can take questions.
What happened to the service? Why was it down?
We honestly don't know. For some reason, we couldn't connect. But Twitter blocked us, but I think we're back up so we can get back genuine attestation. We can take questions.
Go ahead.
So, fantastic work, Chevre. Amazing. We heard a lot from Intel and from Red Hat, a beautiful write-up. And Intel, very long write-up. Nothing from Apple. Can you comment on that, perhaps?
No comments from my side. We were not involved in any of the communication with industry. So my comment on it would be that I see no reason why Apple would not be affected. I also see no reason why they're not communicating about it then.
Okay.
But yeah, I share your concern here.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Question about the L1 issue. I mean, is it limited to L1 just because there is like no time essentially? If you need to fetch it from memory or from L2, is it just that there is no time, or do you think that there is something fundamental that basically they actually check before they access L2?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. My take on it is that it's definitely there is something going on in that microarchitecture that's fundamentally different from Meltdown. So in Meltdown, it basically comes down to having more time, and then you can read from memory. That's why the success rates drop. What we have here is something fundamentally different, because it comes down that the L1 data cache is so tied together with the processor that at the same time it aborts the address translation and still sends it to the L1. And I think further cache levels are simply at the hardware level, more gates away, and by then the clock has ticked and it will not arrive there. So I think we're really talking here about a fundamental microarchitectural limitation and not just something that can be improved when the attack improves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Is there any hope to get hyperthreading back in future generations?
Personally, I would say hyperthreading is side-channel by design. And
right. Other questions? Then let's thank the speakers again.